Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, a show dedicated to discussion involving the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Travis Ryer alongside my great friend and longtime college football analyst, Brent Beard. Brent, of course, most recently a First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, also a voter for the Heisman Trophy. Brent, you already got Arch Manning in that number one spot, by the way. Just got it in ink in that on that ballot. I know we still got a long way to go, but it seems like a lot of people might already be to that point with Arch. But no, in all seriousness, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Yeah, by the way, we are live on the channel. So we appreciate each and every one of you tuning in on this Wednesday night. If you'd like to chime in via the comments, feel free to do so. We'll try to get to those as we move throughout the program. But Brent, since we last spoke, we've got a coaches poll, preseason coaches poll has come out, and we'll just kind of go around the league because pads are popping. We got scrimmages coming up, sort of define these two deeps and these depth charts. We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we do. There's no question about that. And me, along with the poll, there are plenty of other things out right now. Folks are kind of waking up. The ticket price thing is one of the more interesting things that I've seen in a while. And frankly, we'll get in this in a minute, but frankly, it always amazed me, Trav. No telling what's going on with the country or with people individually, but we've always got time and room to raise those ticket prices, don't we?
We do, even though we've got football on every streaming and network platform imaginable these days. It's amazing to me. Now the prices we're going to be talking about are secondary market, you know, so you do take that into account, but still, I kind of wondered about the ticket man. When you had the SEC Network come in and ESPN Plus and these streaming options now, you don't have to leave your couch.
But there's
still a market out there. What we'll show you, though, or talk about coming up in a little bit in that regard, though, has a lot to do with the haves and the have-nots. But it also has a lot to do with who you're playing at home this season and how that sort of lines up with those prices. But again, Brent, we've got a coaches poll that has been issued here in the last week, the preseason coaches poll. Wanted to get your thoughts on that as we move through it. And the USLBM coaches poll. Seems like there's always a different sponsor or something to go along with that every year, every couple of years. But were you surprised, Brent, to see the Texas Longhorns of Steve Sarkisian there in that top spot?
No, I really wasn't. But and kudos to that coaching staff, how they have kept things together they, and you know, Texas is really one of those schools, Travis, that really has not lost a lot of coaches either. Mm-hmm. So I give Steve Sarkisian a lot of credit for that. And I tell you what's interesting is, in terms of that first, or, well, actually, I guess the second weekend after your first weekend, that we usually have a game in Ireland. We do, and we'll talk about that a little later. But Texas and Ohio State are playing. They're 1-2. Mm-hmm. Clemson and LSU are playing. They're 6-9 along the way, too. So it's interesting, is it not, how much of a top 10 preseason coaches poll, by the way, the AP poll will be out next Monday, but and I'm sure this will be pretty similar to the AP, but already, Trav, we've got some very fascinating games coming up that first weekend.
Oh, we've talked about them a little bit already as we've moved through the offseason, but absolutely, Texas and Ohio State and Columbus. Week one, high noon kickoff. You got Penn State in there in the third spot in the coaches poll. Georgia checking in at number four. Notre Dame, Clemson, 5-6. Oregon at 7. There's some more SEC representation at 8-9 with Alabama and LSU respectively. You got Miami rounding out that top 10 in the 10th spot. So wanted to ask you, we've got some other SEC teams in this top 25 as well. South Carolina, lofty by South Carolina standards in the preseason at 13. Ole Miss there at 15. Florida, 17th. Tennessee, 18th. Texas A&M, 21st. You got some other teams from the league receiving votes. Oklahoma, Missouri, basically 26th and 27th when you look at it. From that standpoint, Auburn down there a little ways as well. So let me ask you, those teams that we just talked about in this preseason top 25, as we sit here today, is there one or two of these teams that you think might be undervalued that when we get to December, we're looking at in a little different light than maybe where we saw them or where the coaches poll had them early in August?
I think Ole Miss and Florida very well could be, particularly for Ole Miss, of Austin Simmons, their quarterback lives up to the early billing. But look, Travis, as we talked before, to me, the thing with Ole Miss is how good they could be defensively. Mm-hmm. And people forget that Princely U on that line. Sundarian Perkins, T.J. Daugherty at linebacker, Sage Ryan at safety. I mean, there are a whole lot of names, and we know they're going to be good offensively because of who their coach is and what he has done with this club over the last few years. And particularly, I know Sir Charlie Weiss is considered the offensive coordinator. And maybe Lane Kiffin gives him a little more freedom than we realize. But I think looking at that Ole Miss at 15, but again, Trav, they were headed for the playoffs last year until they lost to Florida late in November. Now, November, South Carolina, the Citadel, Florida, and Mississippi State. So if they're able to somehow get past Florida – and listen, that I'm not saying it will, but if Florida is able to heal up, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Man, that could be quite a game in November between Florida and Ole Miss with a lot of challenges on the line.
Yeah, it helped Ole Miss not to lose to Kentucky too, right?
Yeah, really would, wouldn't it?
We both talked a lot about that loss to Florida late in the season, but you know what? Beat Kentucky, just kind of like Alabama, same thing. I mean, when you looked at Alabama and Ole Miss and those resumes at the end of the regular season last year, and it was time to pick college football playoff teams, they both had some unforgivable type losses. And so they paid for those. You know what? I'll sticking with Alabama though. I think Alabama at 8, when I look at this Alabama team, the first thing that kind of comes to mind for me, Brent, is that if Nick Saban was still the head coach at Alabama with this roster, there's no way Alabama would be eighth.
Oh, no.
In the preseason.
Absolutely not.
Alabama, I would go as far as to say, would not be behind Penn State, would not be behind Notre Dame, would not be behind Clemson, and wouldn't be behind Oregon. Maybe Georgia. I know Georgia's behind Penn State, but I wouldn't see that for this Alabama roster in year two under Kalen DeBoer.
No, and look, like Ole Miss, I think this Alabama defense is very undervalued. You're talking about what, 8 or 9 starters coming back?
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, that line with LT Overton, Tim Keenan, James Smith, and man, Quay Russo and Deontay Lawson, whenever he's able to hit the field. I know they're young, but this Damani Jackson and Bray Hubbard and Zabian Brown, this is a really good defense. If they, Travis, they can stay healthy, that they're going to be one of the better defenses in the league.
But, you know, I'll also say this, and been saying this about Alabama too, their team prove it in the SEC.
They are.
I think that's the sentiment maybe with that ranking of 8 in the preseason. Not that it really matters at all, but I think coaches or whoever's posting those votes for those other coaches and schools that are involved in this pool, I think they're kind of looking at Alabama the same way. Great. We're hearing all this positivity about this roster and all these guys coming back. Let's see you actually go put it on tape. And look, I feel that way about the defense too, because it does look very good on paper, but statistically from an individual standpoint, LT Overton didn't set the woods on fire last year.
He was
noticeable and he was disruptive. But as far as, you know, really getting it done in terms of tackles for loss, sacks, those type of things, Tim Keenan was kind of that guy, the big defensive tackle last year. Other guys need to step forward and add to that for Alabama if they're going to reach their potential. That being said, I guess I am a buyer with the Crimson Tide in terms of the potential to be more than maybe what this preseason poll has them at right now. I'll tell you a team that team or two, you know, we just talked about one or maybe two of them. I think, you know, there's concern for me where South Carolina is concerned. I like the schedule in terms of how it sets up, especially with those home games. We'll get into that from a ticket price perspective coming up in a little bit. But boy, you know, you hope for Florida, what you're hearing just this week with some of these injuries, Dallas Wilson. I don't know if everyone is aware of that injury today, apparently in Gainesville, the ultra talented true freshman wide receiver had what, 10 catches for 195 yards and 2 touchdowns in the orange and blue scrimmage back in the spring. Apparently a lower leg injury, could be out for an extended period of time. Eugene Wilson is out. He's had a little bit of the injury history now during his time in Gainesville. We know DJ Lagway has worked through some issues here in the offseason. You just start to wonder, even though it is August the 6th, that, hey, is this just kind of the way it's going to be, you know, for some of these teams, that they're just going to have to deal with this on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, even once we get into the season?
That's probably true. Now, what's different for Florida than it was last year is, thankfully for Florida, they're not starting off with Miami as they did last year. And they've got a couple of games with Long Island University in South Florida before they start that gauntlet at LSU, at Miami, a week off in Texas, and then at A&M. Man alive, that's 3 out of 4 big games early on the road. So, and Trav, it is not limited to the wide receivers, is it?
No.
The tailbacks.
Trayon Webb had surgery for a ruptured hamstring here earlier in the week. And they've got depth at running back. But, you know, this kind of happened with Texas and Texas A&M last year, too. Yeah. And ultimately, it worked out okay. I'd say probably more so for Texas than it did, say, A&M. because Wisner was so good for Texas last season.
Yes.
With the injury situations that they had going into the 2024 campaign. But here's the thing that we've said about Florida and why running back depth is probably more important to the Gators than any other team in the Southeastern Conference is that, hey, they're going to run the football in that offense.
Oh, yeah,
all the talk about DJ Lagway and as fabulous as he was at times in stretches as a true freshman last year, that's what they're going to do with that offensive line and Ball and the rest of those backs, which is what they should do. But if something else happens to DJ Lagway,
yeah,
they're going to have to be able to run it at a high level. And, you know, that schedule, as you said, incredibly daunting once again, even though it flips a little bit more in favor of SEC games when you get Texas and, you know, some of the games that they're going to have in Gainesville this year. It's still, though, going to be extremely difficult. If Florida goes 7-5 against that schedule, including the road game at Miami, I think Florida should be about where this preseason poll has them. Florida at 7-5 should be a top 20 team with that.
Yeah, agreed. And look, if they get a break or two, could that be even better than that? Mm-hmm. But
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
But your point at running back, I mean, right now, Jacoby Jackson and redshirt freshman KD Daniels led the drills.
Yeah.
Now, again, that's your position drills. But to your point, Trav, it doesn't take but a good 2 or 3 days. If you're not careful, you have depleted your running back situation where you're almost having to put either a true freshman in or maybe a wide receiver just to have bodies back there.
Yeah, and you know that's again where you know the portal can hurt you too. A lot of that,
absolutely.
A lot of that legitimate depth that you used to have moves on. More and more, it seems like these days. I think Tennessee there is a top 20 preseason team is interesting, Brent, because of the tumultuous offseason, especially where the quarterback position is concerned. I know there is some optimism and sort of the trade that was made between Tennessee and UCLA. I'm not as optimistic about that. Maybe it'll play out to work out okay for Tennessee. I guess from a schedule perspective, you know, you're thinking that now things could work out for Tennessee okay with Georgia in Knoxville and, you know, some of the tougher games, Oklahoma in Knoxville. You go on the road to Florida, Vanderbilt in Knoxville, go to Tuscaloosa, but you go to Lexington. I mean, there's very winnable games on the road for this team, so I like that for Josh Heupel. Mississippi State on the road in late September. So, you know, the road shouldn't be as daunting for the Vols as it might be otherwise. But I think 18 still to start the season, maybe a little bit high, not just because of Nico, but because of Dylan Sampson and the defensive losses and those type of things that we've talked about here.
Well, and Joey Aguilar's, well, it may be the quarterback. I mean, he had some impressive numbers, but it was in a lower conference, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And can he repeat that in the SEC? Boo Carter is a guy that has been on and off. He's a sophomore defensive back. He missed off-season workouts, team activities, but he is back on the team, says Josh Heupel. So we will see where that goes. Now, I still think they're better than Syracuse. But again,
I think that could be a war.
Yeah, and, very well could
in
be.
In week one, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And but I think with Georgia in September, mm-hmm. that's going to be tough for them. And then you've got Mississippi State, Arkansas, Alabama, Kentucky, and Oklahoma. I mean, they may be able to kind of rebound and win the majority of those games if they are. That they'd be in pretty good shape. Now, they end the season with Florida and Vanderbilt. But again, having to rebuild this line of scrimmage, really, frankly, having to kind of rebuild at running back and wide receiver. I mean, they had a situation last year where they leaned on that defense in the running game because the trying to rebuild their quarterback situation. It's pretty obvious that people are looking at Tennessee as being a team that likely will not make playoffs.
Yeah, I think Texas A&M at 21 is a team that has a chance to maybe overachieve based on what this type of expectations. And it was disappointing in, no doubt. It was, as we've talked about, a Kevin Sumlin type of November for Mike Elko in his first year there in College Station. But I still tend to be more of a buyer of A&M under Elko. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be that magical second year for Elko and the Aggies, but I think they'll have a chance. I know they got to go to Notre Dame. They got some, I think they go to Austin this year, right? Texas. So schedule will not be easy. It's not going to be for really anybody in the league, but I could see A&M, not being a playoff team, but maybe more in that 14 to 20 range.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could too. Now, the Concepcion kid coming over, KCK Concepcion coming over from NC State, I think will help them tremendously. Now, again, when you do look at this schedule, at Notre Dame, you got a week off, and then you start SEC play with travel, a huge game at home with Auburn. Yeah. For frankly, both those schools. And then in a row, man, oh, man, Florida and Arkansas and LSU at Missouri. I mean, how many SEC teams have three games straight on the road? And then you come back, you've got South Carolina, Samford, and Texas. A&M needs to be pretty solid by the time they get in October, don't they, bud?
Yep, no doubt. And some of these season openers that we've anticipated and already talked about a pretty good bit. You've got Alabama at Florida State on August the 30th. And in this coaches poll, the Florida State Seminoles received the same number of votes as Dan Mullen's first UNLV team.
Yeah, they sure did.
Now, maybe the Seminoles rebound pretty nicely here after the disastrous 2024 season, but just interesting to note as you break down the vote here in the coaches poll. Well, Brent, as we move around camps in the Southeastern Conference, has there been anything else of note that maybe has caught your eye at the different outposts around the league?
Well, there's a lot going on. We've kind of just hinted at Oklahoma may have a top 20 scoring defense. For the first time, this is hard to believe, Trav. Oklahoma will have a top 20 scoring defense for the first time since 2009.
Wow.
That's amazing to me to not have one in the last 15 seasons. But again, your head coach, Brent Venables, one of the better defensive minds, frankly, in the league. Jaden Ott, and I tell you what, you talk about beefing up your skill positions. John Mateer at quarterback, Jay Nunn at running back, coming over basically from the, I used to say the Pac-12, it's now more the Pac-2 until they get it going. The Oklahoma and the line, they've got five guys who they can really depend on. I don't want to get too ahead of myself here with Oklahoma, But Trev, I can see why people like them and think they will be another, that won't be a 500 team this year.
Yeah, you definitely like the urgency. It seems Brent Venables gets it from that perspective, mm-hmm. or did. And Mateer's going to be fascinating. Could he have maybe not a Joe Burrow-like impact as a transfer? And people forget, you know, Burrow, it wasn't an overnight thing for him at LSU.
No.
2018 was okay, mm-hmm. but I don't know if based on 2018 anyone really saw what might be coming in 2019. Now, he had some absolute dudes all around him, too. I don't think John Mateer is going to have that type of arsenal to work with. But, Oklahoma's going to be interesting to find out about. And I don't think it's going to take long, because as much as we talk about week one, those week two matchups, man, Oklahoma hosting Michigan on September 6th. We'll learn more than a little bit about the Sooners in that one. And then Auburn on September the 20th mm-hmm. in Norman. I do kind of like this. It's pretty balanced for Oklahoma schedule wise, but I like the Michigan game in Norman, Auburn in Norman, get Ole Miss in Norman. But look, the balance comes into play because you're going to, you're playing Texas and Dallas like you always do. Yeah. You're going to South Carolina mm-hmm. and you're going to Tennessee too on November the 1st, going to Alabama on November the 15th. So we talk about schedules a lot for good reason. There's just not many breaks.
No, there's really not. Tell you what, their defense could be a lot better, couldn't it? I mean, it was reasonable last year, but they could be much better this year. I mean, Jake Jackson, Demonic Williams, they've got Mason Thomas, they've got pretty good linebackers and defensive backs. I mean, they'll be solid offensively. But for Brent Venables, it's going to be an important year for him, to say the least.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. So, Brent, let's talk some ticket prices. I thought this was very interesting. You brought this to my attention. You know, the secondary market's always been borderline crazy in the Southeastern Conference. The demand for tickets in the secondary market, as much as we talked about earlier how we thought there was a bubble, it doesn't seem to have happened as of yet. Now, I will say this. I don't think road contingents are nearly what they used to be. And I think that shows up in some of the more kind of mediocre to even upper mediocre matchups. Now, the premier matchups are still insane in terms of get-in prices and things like that. But I don't think the demand is what it once was, because it just doesn't seem like teams travel, fan bases travel. Now, you've got the tried and true fan bases that are going to travel. But I think even in those corners, there's been a dip from that perspective. I think there's been more access to folks a little lower in sort of the season ticket pecking order to be able to go on the road at face value prices than there was 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago. But still, boy, when you do look at some of these numbers that we're going to pull up here in just a little bit, let me see if I can get this up here. I'm sure I can. Right here we go. Coming up right now. There we go. Right there on the screen. We'll start to see it. These are secondary market prices. Yeah. And Georgia averaging $277.38 per ticket. Mm-hmm. When you talk about the course of the season. Now look, Georgia's got Alabama at home. Georgia's got Ole Miss at home. Georgia's got Texas at home. That kind of tells you a lot of what you need to know. That Georgia season ticket is a good one.
Yes. Well, and Texas is pretty close behind them, only $4 difference at $273.86. Now, the thing that really got my attention is the average SEC ticket price up 50%, 49% in 2025, $132 compared to last season of 88.
Yeah.
That tells you a lot about what's going on around the league. Mm-hmm. It tells you about the upper echelon teams. But to have it that up, now not everybody's going up. A&M has some of the cheaper ticket prices. Mm-hmm. Now, South Carolina had an increase. Good gracious, almost 200.
South Carolina's got a great season ticket. Now, they got Alabama and Columbia. They got right. OU in Columbia, right? Clemson is in Columbia this year. So that sort of makes sense too. Florida to me is a little bit surprised that it's not higher.
Yeah,
because of the Gators' home schedule is still pretty good, even after what they had last year. So, Alabama at $125. That's probably lower than you would expect. And some of this has to do with, I guess, stadium size too. You know, I mean, you look at Texas A&M, that's 100,000 seats, Alabama, 100,000 seats. Mm-hmm. So there's some of that that probably comes into play. And you know, Alabama's home ticket, it's not bad, but as we talked about, the Tide goes to Georgia. Now, Alabama does get Tennessee at home. Alabama gets Wisconsin in Tuscaloosa. Alabama, of course, gets LSU in Tuscaloosa.
Oklahoma in Tuscaloosa.
There are some still attractive games. So it's hard to make much of these two because it is the preseason. And we know the market will be impacted.
Oh, yes.
On a week-to-week basis based on how these teams perform.
Well, listen, this is worth a little bit of further discussion about this. The reality for this, Trav, is what is this telling us about does the league still – I mean, to me, they value your TV market beyond going to the game experience. And this is another situation, and my concern is – as people used to be able to do it, families, you know, say a dad and a couple of young kids, you know, they would used to go the game together. Now it may be just dad and one of the kids, and they're taking turns or something like that. So, I mean, it's really setting up great for the TV market. But with the addition that we're going to have to some of the stadiums, and I agree it will be better seating, but it will be less seating. I'm just wondering, Trav, what this is going to look like 5 and 10 years down the road. Are we going to have that much decided because of TV more than the fans being in the stadium?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to track, no doubt about it. Brent, anything else before we get out of here on a Wednesday night?
Well, I think there is, when you look back at the season and how close it is to beginning at this point, we can form a little bit of what we think is going to happen. Could the SEC have Texas, Georgia, Alabama and LSU and the playoffs? We're a long way from that, frankly, and I understand that people don't want to discuss it that much. But the interesting thing about this league is, could this be a year where this league, maybe instead of having three teams, Trav, could they have four or five teams as a possibility? I know it will shake out before it's over, but those are some of the fascinating things to talk about this time of year.
Yeah, I think even based on just looking at the preseason poll, the expectation is going to be four, right?
I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got Texas, you got Georgia, you got Alabama.
LSU.
LSU. That's four in the top nine. Now, things can play out in other leagues that can impact that, as we saw a year ago. But, I mean, if you're saying those four teams in South Carolina on the cusp at 13, Ole Miss right there at 15, I mean, you got six teams in the top 15.
Oh, yeah,
so absolutely. If that's sort of the preseason look at this, it would be a bit of a disappointment if for the second year in a row the SEC falls short of four teams in the college football playoff. I wanted to ask you, too, because it is so early, maybe some early preseason Heisman picks. I'm not Klubnik of Clemson, Alar of Penn State, definitely in that mix. Smith, the wide receiver at Ohio State. I mean, these are some of the obvious guys. And then Arch Manning. Do you think there's an SEC guy other than Arch Manning that maybe we're overlooking a little bit as we get ready to go into this season where the Heisman is concerned?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a shame they won't consider Dylan Stewart on the defensive side of the ball into Travis, and the damage EMAC could do, frankly, would be fascinating also. I mean, Arch will get a lot of publicity. I don't think there's any question about that. Where that could go, you know, could the day be coming where a defensive player though has that kind of year, you know, like a Harold Perkins at LSU that goes way above and beyond and just startles people almost. I wonder.
I'll tell you the Perkins in the SEC that. intrigues me the most defensively is Suntarian.
Yeah, that's true.
From Ole Miss. Suntarian Perkins has kind of become the guy we thought Harold Perkins was going to be.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And maybe this is the year where Harold Perkins becomes more of that sort of guy. And Philip Thomas checks in here and says it would have to be a DB. And not just a DB, Philip, but probably a DB a la Charles Woodson, who returns punts, returns kicks. And the return game in football has become so minimalized and due in large part to player safety and those type of initiatives, Brent, that's become even more difficult to do now. You know, it's a tough one. You know, Travis Hunter obviously did it last year as a two-way player. I think you'd almost have to be a two-way DB wide receiver type to do what Travis Hunter did.
You would. There's no question about that. But they're just guys all over the league that if they really stood out, that could be extremely good. I mean, frankly, Garrett Nussmeier, I think is on the verge of having a tremendous year when you look at that. I mean, you know, it's funny. We're talking about all these guys and barely even mention anybody from Georgia, which is probably the way they like it. But Trev, if Florida's 9-3 and they've got three really close losses to what? Georgia and Texas, teams like that. Not only would they be considered, I think, for the playoffs, and then if Lagway blew up, where would he be in all this?
Yeah, I think that could be a real possibility on both those fronts. I think, you know, the thing with the league, Sellers is another guy at South Carolina. If you project South Carolina as a top 15 team and you're saying that's where they're going to be at the end of the season, that's going to tell me Sellers Lenoris had a hell of a season.
Sure will.
And so he would probably have to be in that mix in his own right. So maybe some sort of off the radar guys, although Sellers has been talked about a lot. There's some people out there feel like he's the top NFL quarterback prospect in the league, including Arch. So, I mean, Arch is the obvious, you know, that kind of goes with that. And then, you know, a guy like Ryan Williams at Alabama, I wouldn't forget about him.
Absolutely.
And with Ryan Grubb in there and, you know, coordinating that offense in year two and coming up with more and more ways to get him the football. And who knows? I don't know if the quarterback change could end up being a good thing or a bad thing for Ryan Williams. That's sort of the X factor with Ryan Williams. I'm sitting here and I'm not sure either way. But I'm certainly not going to knock his chances because there's been a quarterback change.
Well,
I think Ty Simpson can get him the ball or whoever's pulling that trigger enough to get him what he needs. And you talk about big plays and the big moments. I mean, think about his play against Georgia in that game last year. If he has a couple of plays like that this year and that team makes the playoff and is 10-11 wins, I can see Ryan Williams being right there as much as, you know, you think Smith from Ohio State and some of these other guys.
Well, and they may not have won the game regardless, but you remember he had a tremendous play against Oklahoma that was not even counted. But you know, here's the other thing. What if Williams at some point is double and triple teamed almost? I mean, what's that going to do, Trav, for Isaiah Horton and Jeremy Bernard? You've got three guys there for Alabama that are going to be really hard to cover.
Oh, no doubt. You know, Ryan Williams is a true freshman, averaged 18 yards per catch and had 8 touchdown catches last year. I mean, and again, I'm thinking Ryan Grubb's going to be able to work even more magic with him.
Even with
the quarterback change in Tuscaloosa. Now, how the rest of that team performs might impact Ryan Williams' chances
more
than anything else. Yeah. Because if they underachieve for a second straight year, it's probably going to be tough to make it to New York City. Brent, it's always a lot of fun, my man.
Yes.
Always enjoy getting together with you. And we're going to do it again here real soon because, man, we are inching closer and closer to the bullets being live and real.
And Trav, it would not be a night together if we didn't give a Pops report on how he's doing, his excitement toward the season, and Trav, will he be out watering the yard in about half an hour?
Oh, he's out there right now. He waters. He's a rogue waterer. I'm turning him in right here on live YouTube. He'll be out there watering his new grass after he burned up his old yard, you know, at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
that new St. Augustine he had put down. He's actually World Traveler Pops. He and Nana going to Europe coming up in about a month.
Really?
So, I think so, going to Austria or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So you mean during the season he'll be traveling?
Yeah. He'll be on the road.
Now, Trav, does the chance of some kind of international incident rise a little bit with Pops?
He's mellowed a lot, Brent. I mean, he's still socially awkward. I mean, very socially awkward. And not somebody you want to wheel out probably in too many of those situations or the crowds. But, I mean, he's pretty much tame at this point. I mean, it took 77 years.
Yeah, it did.
So it wasn't an overnight thing, the transformation. But more and more, that's the Pops we get these days.
Well, I understand that. Good for him. Hopefully he'll enjoy himself. But
He will. Hopefully Nana enjoys it. I mean, Pops, I don't worry about Pops. I mean, Pops, he'll be fine. All right, Brent, we'll do it again soon, man.
Good.
All right. Thanks to everyone out there. And let's see here. Our good friend Tex Titer with a reminder. Hit the thumbs up, folks. We appreciate the thumbs up, the likes.
We do.
Subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Hit that notification bell. You'll be alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. And with that, for Brent Beard, I'm Travis Ryer. Thanking you once again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube for Second Helping. And until next time, so long, everybody.